We've been down, we've been up. What do the markets have in store for us today? In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams, in for David Brancaccio. U.S. markets opened down today across all three major indices. It's the latest in a week of extreme swings, the worst Christmas Eve ever for the market, then a massive rally yesterday after coming back from the Christmas holiday, with the Dow gaining more than 1,000 points in one day. The Dow lost about a third of those gains at the market open. To unpack all of this, I'm joined by Diane Swonk. She's chief economist at the tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton. Good morning.
Good morning.
So it looks like volatility is still the story today, as it has been all week.
That certainly is the case. I think one of the key issues is, one, the chaos and the uncertainty that created the volatility, that veil is yet to be lifted. Everything from concerns about trade, the Federal Reserve, and what is the government doing with regard to having the Treasury Secretary make announcements about the soundness of the banks. Is something wrong with them? Hopefully not.
And later today, we get some new numbers on consumer confidence. What are you expecting there?
Well, what we're seeing is consumers are still very confident despite volatility in the stock market. They are more concerned about the future than they were. But it's also important to remember, much of the reason this was such a spectacular Christmas is finally the very lowest wage workers saw increases in their wages and were able to spend. They might have once been middle income households and are now low wage households. That said, they had some momentum and extra change in their pockets with falling prices at the pump that allowed them to spend more, and they're not as sensitive because they don't have exposure to the stock market.
And it's worth noting here that these are private consumer confidence numbers. We're missing a lot of government data because of the shutdown.
Exactly. And one of the things I do worry about is the data that we won't see over the next several weeks if, in fact, the government stays closed, because that leaves us more in a haze of uncertainty right when we need that haze lifted.
Diane Swonk is chief economist at the tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Amazon's third annual Digital Day officially launches tomorrow. The company is offering deep discounts on digital content, books, movies, and games, content Amazon hopes you'll use with that new smart speaker you might have bought or received over the holidays. Marketplace's Andy Euler reports that what you put on that device is a new field of competition for retailers.
Amazon says it shipped more than a billion items over the holidays. One of the most popular items sold this year was the company's new Echo Dot. When you get one of those devices, you need to put stuff on it. Bob Phibbs runs the consultancy The Retail Doctor. He says this is yet another strategy
to get you deeper into the universe that is Amazon. Because if you're tied in, if I take your money to put it in Kindle, you're probably not going to put it in your iPhone books.
Amazon is battling Apple, Netflix, and other companies that are spending billions on proprietary content. Jessica Ramirez, a retail analyst at Jane Halley & Associates, says these firms are spending the cash because that's what the consumer wants.
If your content is good on your website, on your mobile, on social media, that's really what's driving the consumer to your doors or to your website.
Amazon is also collecting data on your buying habits. So if the company knows what you read, what video games you play, and what music you like, it can sell that to marketers for top dollar and make even more profit. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
December 31st is coming up fast, and that means time is running out to support Marketplace and to make your gift go twice as far. Donate today at marketplace.org to invest in news you value and trust, and your contribution.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
In any amount will be matched dollar for dollar by our friends at Candida. Thank you so much for your generosity.
There was a time in this country when we didn't need new toys every Christmas. In fact, toy lending libraries were a common phenomenon, at least in big cities. Their numbers dwindled over the years, but they are starting to make a comeback. Reporter Ryan Kyloth has the story.
Back in 1942, a toy library was called a toyery, and New York City was getting its first.
Toys for the youngsters of Harlem. Busy Mayor LaGuardia officially opens his city's first toyery, a sort of a lending library with toys taking the place of books.
The idea came out of the progressive wave of the 1920s, says Alexander Lang, author of The Design of Childhood.
The 1920s is when most children start going to school and not to work. So there's a real uptick in new schools, new playgrounds, and also new activities.
Within decades, toy libraries were common. Mr. Rogers had one in his TV neighborhood. They often lived inside public libraries. People checked out toys just like books. But as government funding began to disappear in the late 70s and the 80s, toy libraries did too. Though the last 20 years or so have seen a new crop, like this one at Middle Country Public Library in Center Reach, New York.
So we have doctor sets, we have musical instruments, lots of different puzzles.
Librarian Amanda Penzick says Middle Country's program started in the 90s, lending out expensive adaptive toys for kids with special needs. But over time, it grew. Now people can check out hundreds of toys for 2 weeks at a time.
In our community, there are a lot of, middle-income families. Toys aren't always cheap, and children sometimes really want something, and then in a couple weeks or months, they outgrow that item.
Angelica Finnegan brings her 3-year-old son here several days a week.
He enjoys it. This is like his second home, honestly.
Author Alexander Lang says while the concept was born from a charitable impulse, many newer toyeries have sustainability in mind.
People not wanting as much plastic in their homes and not wanting to have things for a short time and then throw them away.
There are now about 400 toy libraries nationwide, according to, yes, the USA Toy Library Association, and about 3 new ones launching every month. In New York, I'm Ryan Kailoth for Marketplace.
And contributing to all that uncertainty I was discussing with Diane Swonk earlier, we still don't have a deal to end the ongoing partial government shutdown. That means hundreds of thousands of federal workers will spend a 6th day furloughed or working without pay, although retroactive pay is expected. House and Senate are scheduled to meet today, although many members are still out of town. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.